And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
As of reading this from the Daily Telegraph on the 11th day of the Israel-Gaza war, the campaign appears to be in limbo. Israel long ago reasserted control of its territory on the Gaza border. Its air force has subjected the occupied territory to more than a week of relentless bombardment, and 300,000 reservists, backed by tanks and helicopters, are massed for ground invasion. Yet the order to start never comes, and officially, the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF, will not explain why. On Tuesday, Lieutenant Colonel Richard Hecht, a spokesman for the IDF, told reporters that plans for the operation were still being drawn up. "I'm not going to comment on our future plans," he said. He said this operation is something different, adding, "We have to break off from the old Gaza tit for tat. It's going to look different, it's going to take longer, and it's going to look totally different. These plans are being developed, they'll be decided by and presented to our political leadership." In reality, the delay reflects complex calculations about hostages, pressures from allies to avoid civilian casualties, and the threat of intervention by Hezbollah. Hostages. Hamas is believed to be holding 199 hostages captured during its bloody raid into southern Israel on October the 7th. Ask an Israeli spokesman on the record about negotiations to free them, and you'll be told that it's impossible to negotiate with Hamas after last weekend's massacres. In reality, their fate is a major moral and political consideration. They include a number of male and female soldiers, but many, perhaps most of them, are civilians. They include women, children, and elderly people, some of whom suffer from chronic health conditions. Everyone knows that few, if any, of the hostages would be likely to survive a ground offensive. Hamas claims 22 of them have already been killed by Israeli airstrikes. The claim is impossible to immediately confirm. Lieutenant Colonel Hecht described the reporters Hamas psyops. In the stunned aftermath of the October 7th massacres, many Israelis in private conversations suggested that this was the sacrifice that would have to be made, part of the grim price for securing the country from Hamas once and for all. But many others, already furious with the government and security establishment for failing to protect them, are in no mood to see more women and children die. On Saturday, the families of several hostages gathered outside the IDF headquarters in Tel Aviv to demand their loved ones be brought home alive, and as soon as possible. They have no intention of allowing the government to sacrifice their children, parents and siblings in the name of military necessity. So it seems some kind of talks are going on. On Monday, the Times of Israel reported that the hostages were at the top of the agenda for Antony Blinken, the United States Secretary of State, during his whirlwind tour of regional capitals this last week. And Qatar has publicly said it is hoping to broker the release of at least the women and children. Hamas is clearly keen to keep the hostage issue alive. It released a proof-of-life video of Maya Shem, 21, who was kidnapped from the Nova Music Festival on Monday night, and demanded Israel release 6,000 prisoners in exchange for the hostages' safe return. Some will say that plays into the terrorists' hands, but despite what the hardliners say, Israel's government needs to give talks a chance. Pressure. The other consideration is political and diplomatic. Israel's traditional allies, including the US and Britain, have been unequivocal in backing its right to defend itself, but that support is not unqualified. As James Cleverly, the Foreign Secretary, said last week, Israel's allies also expect the IDF to show a degree of restraint. Western governments and cooler heads in the Israeli war cabinet must be aware that a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza will only reinforce the cycle of violence and thirst for revenge that Hamas recruitment relies on. It would also stoke public anger in Israel's Arab neighbors, sabotaging efforts to normalize relations. It could also inflame a regional war. Western public opinion is also likely to turn against Israel if it's seen to subject the Gaza Strip to massive collective punishment. The full-scale siege of Gaza, cutting off water, electricity and fuel supplies, and a furious bombing campaign that has killed nearly 3,000 people already risks squandering public sympathy. A ground invasion is likely to be infinitely more violent. That is why Mr. Blinken is exerting enormous efforts to persuade Israel and Egypt to reach agreement on opening a corridor for civilians to leave and aid to be delivered. It may also explain why Israel has indefinitely extended its deadline for civilians in the northern half of the Gaza Strip to move south of the Wadi Gazi River. The original deadline of 24 hours was clearly unworkable, as international aid agencies made clear. There is a bigger political risk here too, the exit strategy. It is not at all clear that Israel has a clear vision about what to do afterwards if it achieves its aim of destroying Hamas. Some hardliners back an open-ended occupation and a return of the settlements withdrawn in 2005. Others would like to withdraw and install a more pliable successor government to Hamas. Both options are fraught with political, moral and military risk. Israel's British and American allies will be begging Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, and his war cabinet not to repeat their mistakes from the war on terror. Military. The bottom line is that a full-scale invasion of Gaza, designed not only to free the hostages but demolish Hamas, is incredibly difficult. Hamas is believed to have spent more than a year planning its incredibly bloody attacks. There is no way they failed to game out a forceful Israeli response and prepare for it. Gaza City is a dense urban environment, what soldiers call a 360-degree battle space. Hamas will be defending terrain it knows intimately well, and Israel's advantages in armor will be significantly diminished. Sniper teams, IEDs, improvised explosive devices, and prepared kill zones will all be lying in wait for the advancing Israelis. Israeli officials have made clear the operation will be lengthy and costly. If successful, it could end up looking like Russia's destruction of Grozny in the 2000s. There is a wider military consideration too. Hezbollah, the powerful Iranian-backed militia based in Lebanon, has indicated it may enter the war if a ground assault on Gaza goes ahead. Exchanges of fire on Israel's northern border are already intensifying. Lieutenant Colonel Hecht insisted that Israel is capable and ready to fight a two-front war. Diplomatic channels have been used to warn the Lebanese government of a catastrophic response if Hezbollah decides to go all in. Two US aircraft carriers have been moved to the region to back up that threat. But the reality is that it would be an extremely difficult proposition. Most of Israel's 300,000 reservists and the bulk of its tanks appear to be massed around Gaza. Hezbollah's supposedly immense arsenal of rockets could cause massive damage to northern Israel. So Israeli generals will be working out how to contain the northern threat while going ahead with the Gaza operation. And it is not clear how to do so. Church leaders met to choose a replacement for the Church of Wales's first woman bishop after she prompted fury by tweeting that people should never, never, never trust a Tory. Dr. Joanna Pemberthy, 62, apologised after posting the tweet in March 2021. And later resigned from the top position she held for 6 years in May this year, citing ill health. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Justin Welby, had said he was deeply embarrassed by her post, as Conservative MPs called for her to resign. Dr. Pemberthy had previously expressed her anti-Brexit and anti-Conservative views with her 3,287 Twitter followers. Her Twitter handle includes the acronyms GTTO and FBPE, which stand for Get the Tories Out and Follow Back Pro-European. Leader of the Welsh Conservatives in the Senedd, Andrew R.T. Davis, described the message as troubling to many of her parishioners in West Wales. A three-day election process has started for the new Bishop of St. David's, one of the top positions in the Church in Wales. Members of the diocese have called for the new bishop to put the diocese back together after the divisive comments made by Dr. Pemberthy. The churches have admitted the new leading clergy faces big challenges to unite people after the divisive tweet promoted public backlash. The Venerable Eileen Davis, Archdeacon of Cardigan, admitted that the new bishop faced a significant challenge. She said, "It's going to be a massive role for the next bishop, whoever that person will be, in bringing people from all walks of life together and from every gender. We need to get to our people and talk to them, and to have people warmly welcomed into our churches. Members of the diocese call for the next bishop to be politically astute without holding a partisan agenda of their own. It also suggested the new bishop will have to deal with many churches and dwindling and aging congregations. Dr. Pemberthy was the first woman to be consecrated as a bishop in the Church of Wales in January 2017. In March 2021, she caused a storm after tweeting that people should never, never, never trust a Tory, following allegations the Welsh Conservatives wanted to abolish the Senate. She later apologised, saying she expressed, in a way which was both irresponsible and disrespectful, and I deeply regret this. In a report prepared for the Electoral College, members of the diocese said that both clergy and ordinary members of the church had experienced fatigue and low morale. St. David's Cathedral will be closed as a college of 47 people representing churches from across Wales meets inside to nominate and vote on a confidential list of candidates for the next bishop. Any candidate receiving two-thirds of the votes of those present is declared bishop-elect. Otherwise, the college returns to the nomination stage and the cycle starts again. Once a decision is made, the cathedral will reopen and the Archbishop of Wales, Andrew John, will make the announcement at the west door. The college is up to 3 days to make a decision. If it fails to elect anyone, the decision will pass on to the bench of bishops. The new bishop will be consecrated at Bangor Cathedral, the seat of the current Archbishop of Wales. Announcing her retirement, the Archbishop of Wales, the Most Reverend Andrew John, said that Dr. Pemberthy's contribution to the Church in Wales has been significant. She has contributed significantly to areas of church life, in particular on environmental matters and with our social responsibility network, he said. A decision like this is never easy to make. A Japanese airline was forced to book an extra flight for a group of sumo wrestlers after they made their plane too heavy to take off. The elite wrestlers have been scheduled to fly from Tokyo to Osaka to take part in Japan's premier sporting tournament last week. But at an average weight of 18 stone 12 pounds, that's 120 kilos, officials soon realized they would have to bring in extra planes to ferry the athletes over, Japan News reported. It is extremely unusual for us to operate special flights due to the weight restrictions on this aircraft, an airline representative told a local news outlet. Japan Airlines said most passengers weigh about 70 kilos, 11 stone. Flights 2465 from Itami and 659 from Haneda were judged potentially overweight after the sumos ready to board on September the 12th, according to 373 News. The airline then added on flight 4677 from Haneda, taking 14 from the first Haneda flight. When the National Sports Festival of Japan tournament ended on September the 15th, the airline prepared another special flight for the return leg, ensuring nobody will be left in Anami City. Reports say the airline will also ensure the regular flight from Fukuoka to Haneda is upgraded to larger aircraft. Some 460 athletes journeyed to Anami for the festival and Japan's premier sports event of the year. The festival was staged for ice hockey and skiing in January and February before coming together for the main events in September and October. Sumo wrestling is a traditional Japanese combat sport where two enormous wrestlers, or rikishi, try to force each other out of a circular ring or make any part of their opponent's body, except the soles of their feet, touch the ground. Its origins date back over 1,000 years, with roots in Shinto rituals and military training. Sumo has evolved from a religious ceremony to a professional sport with strict traditions and customs. The sport consists of various rituals, a strict hierarchy, and a focus on physical strength, balance, and technique. Today, it remains a highly regarded and popular sport in Japan, with a rich history and cultural significance. A priest has been accused of desecration after installing two beer pumps in a 600-year-old church. The bar was set up by the St. Ives Brewery at St. Ives Church ahead of the Cornwall Town's annual September Festival. It is the first time the church, consecrated in 1434, has been chosen as one of the main venues for the two-week celebration of music and arts. The Reverend Dr. Nick Widows defended his decision. people always have different opinions, so you're never going to do everything or anything that's new that is universally welcomed and accepted, he said. A few of our congregation are not particular fans of the beer pumps especially, but they are only temporary. What I say to them is that this is just part of our way of welcoming all sorts of people into the church. Above all, we want people to come in and have a positive experience of their time here. Many people don't come into the church building at all, and actually, if people come in and have a great time at a festival event, then who knows, maybe they'll come in for something else as well when we put it on. St. Ives resident Barry Lewis said putting a bar in the church desecrates the memory of those who died for their faith. He said, as a long-standing member of the St. Ives Church congregation, I must protest in the strongest possible terms regarding the siting of a bar to sell beer close to the high altar and the most sacred parts of our church. For over 600 years, since it was first consecrated, the church has been the outward and visible sign of the spiritual grace granted to us through the martyrdom of St. Ives and others in the town. Additionally, for the current vicar to be photographed pulling pints, wearing vestments, usually warm and celebrating the Eucharist, it is simply intolerable. I know that many of the congregation will agree with my comments. Another churchgoer, Evie Rose, added, "This is a house of God, not a pub." Angela Homer said, "I must confess that I visited this church for the first time last week after visiting St. Ives for more than 30 years. It is a beautiful church, but it was quite a shock when I saw the bar. I immediately thought, well, maybe it'll encourage more people to attend. Who knows?" And finally, young Pastor Jamie had prepared a long and passionate sermon for his new congregation on his first Sunday. But the night before he was due to deliver this sermon, the town was hit by a big blizzard, and the roads were icy and impassable. In fact, only Pastor Jamie and one farmer arrived at the church that Sunday morning. Pastor Jamie said, "I suppose we won't have a service today." The farmer replied, "When I go out to feed the cows, if even only one cow shows up at feeding time, I feed her." "You're right," replied Pastor Jamie, who then launched into his sermon, long and passionate, just as he had planned. It was beautiful, fire and brimstone, redemption and forgiveness, a work of art. At the end, he looked at the farmer and said, "Well, what did you think? How did I do?" The farmer thought for just a minute and then said, "Well, if I go out to feed the cows and only one shows up, I would feed her, but I wouldn't give her the whole load."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.